Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 178 for February 2nd, 2010. Flash is cilantro. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac off-site securely and automatically. For a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase, go to carbonite.com. Offer code MacBreak. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by GoToMyPC, the safe way to access your PC remotely that's as secure as online banking. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers everything that has to do with Apple, especially the iPad. Because I have a feeling this is going to be one of them shows. Right now, on the line with me, via Skype, the bouffant of all knowledge, Mr. Chris Breen. It's great to see you, Chris, senior editor, Macworld.
Hi, Leo.
And the author of Mac 9, is it 911 or 411?
It's 911.
911. 411 is information, 911 is help.
When you really need the big help.
When you really need it. We're so glad to have you back on. We had you on last week during our iPad coverage, and we realized suddenly that Skype is working again for you.
You know, if you change ISPs, miraculous things happen.
Jeez. I mean, we could not pick you up at all, but now you look great. This is great.
Well, thank you. I've got a new blush and a foundation I'm using now.
So it's looking lovely.
A little of that. Thank you.
Chris Breen's makeup by Max Factor. Also joining us right now, Mr. Andy Iannotko, who needs no makeup. He's just beautiful all on his own. Hello, Mr. I.
And my suits are by Botany 500.
From the Chicago Sun-Times. Back home where you belong.
Yes, back home to the 14-degree weather, where you realize that the suit jacket that served you so well in 52-degree San Francisco probably should have been rethought, given that we would be landing back.
Well, you're coming back, aren't you, tomorrow?
I'm coming back. I'm not tomorrow, but I'm leaving a week from today. I'm leaving next Tuesday for 8 days in sunny, funny San Francisco.
For the big Macworld Expo. In fact,
that gum better be where I left it on the bottom of that park bench, San Francisco. I trusted you. Okay, this is going to be a trust exercise.
Gum or gun or gub?
Well, let's just see which one is what.
Also here, Merlin Mann from 43folders.com and the great "You Look Nice Today" podcast. Great to see you once again, Merlin.
Thanks, Leo. Nice to be here.
Alex Lindsay is on assignment in the Seychelles. I kid you not. I don't know why.
Is that code for something?
No,
what does that mean?
He's in the Seychelles Islands.
Freaky San Francisco things you people are into?
No, it's just north of Madagascar.
Oh, I bet it is. You're not going to take me north of Madagascar when I'm there next week. Guarantee you that.
Yes, we have south of Market and north of Madagascar.
Is this a lost tie-in? I mean, does this island move around from time to time?
I cannot figure out what he's doing in the Seychelles Islands, but apparently he says it's work.
I have that kind of work sometimes too.
Ooh, yeah.
Pretty good idea.
I find that work on Craigslist often.
You think he's having work done? Maybe that's what it is. Poor Alex, he's not here to defend himself. But if he comes back, you know, just a little extra happy.
We're supposed to just ask if he's lost weight.
That's right. You just look well rested. I think that's
caught up on a lot of sleep during those 3.5 weeks.
You look so well rested. I hate to do it to you guys, but there really is only one story in the Apple world, at least for a while. There's some other minor stories, but it's the iPad. Well, I guess we'll start with asking you one by one. Now, a week later, what your assessment is. I did not expect the backlash, the negativity from so many people on the iPad. People hate the name. The lack of multitasking, the lack of a camera, the lack of, I don't know, a solar panel on the back. People wanted more, I guess. What do you think, Chris Breen? Are you at this point bullish on the iPad? At least its ability to sell?
You know, I am. Mainly my reaction is just after a week of this, my head is pounding and I've been tweeting quotes from the Grinch because I've kind of had it with all the noise about this thing. I think it's going to do perfectly well. I think that the geeks among us really, really care a lot about Flash and HTML5, but everybody else, meaning the majority of people who buy this, they don't give a damn. I mean, it will be a perfectly lovely device. They will pick it up. They will use it. If they encounter pages that don't use or that have Flash and they can't use it, they'll say, oh, that's fine. I'm accustomed to that. I've seen that on my iPod Touch. I've seen it on my iPhone. No big deal. I'll move along. As people continue to use devices like this, then maybe Flash will go away simply because people are choosing other ways to view their media. But for the most part, it seems like people have forgotten that we've already been here a couple of times. We've done this with the iPod. We've done it with the iPhone. The same kind of noise occurred then. It was more about price in that case than it is now. But still, it's like, well, this is never going to work. It's going to be a terrible failure. And then a year down the line, we all look back and go, oh, look at that. People seem to like this device.
Yeah. You agree, Andy?
I really think it's going to be more of a situation where it's going to be the geek's device for the first year. And during that time, everybody who right now is unwise for people to be skeptical about a device that doesn't have certain basic things that they tend to associate with a computer. It's not unrealistic for them to have those fears. But during that year, the people like us who bought them early, we're going to be in airplanes, we're going to be in conference rooms, we're going to be in restaurants and burrito stands using this thing. And I think a year from now, when all those people, they have $500 or $600 to buy a new laptop or buy a new this or that, they're going to remember that, well, you know, there was that guy in the conference room who was taking notes on an iPad instead of a notebook, and that worked really, really well. And just remember that time that we were flying from Boston to San Francisco, and there's this guy who had his iPad out for like 6 whole hours getting things done and reading things and being entertained. Maybe I'll just at least take a look at it. It takes a while for you to realize that a new thing is indeed a new thing and not just a new version of the thing that you've been looking at for the past 2 or 3 or 4 years.
It does seem like everybody's comparing it to the netbook, you know, and I don't know if it's a netbook replacement.
I mean, this is one of those instances in which there was a really great book about the development of the lunar lander. It's just nothing but the project manager of the entire lunar lander program at Grumman Aviation about how this thing was designed and developed. And it just reminded me of the chapter in which he talks about this breakthrough moment in which, you know, they're trying to figure out, how do we save weight? Gosh, we have these huge windows in the lunar lander. They're structurally bad, and they let in too much heat, and that's a big problem. And then suddenly somebody had the idea, wait a minute, what if we just take out the seats? And there wasn't, well, we got to have seats in this thing. Well, no, you don't, because this isn't an aircraft that we normally build. This is a spacecraft that operates in almost no gravity. Even when it lands on the moon, it's going to be on almost zero gravity. And as soon as they deleted the seats, they realized that almost all of the other problems that they were having with this design went away. And all because they were trying to design this thing to make it like every other thing they've ever built, without even thinking about, do we need everything that we usually put in one of these things?
You talk to a lot of mainstream media, do a lot of interviews. Their interest is still high, yes?
Still extremely high, chiefly because they know that anything that Apple does, not only is it about the thing itself, but it's also about the ripple effect they're going to have not only with society, but other businesses.
Yeah.
So they're still covering this pretty aggressively. There was a big debate with my producer at CBS about whether we can even afford to do my segment after the first Saturday after the event, or whether we should just make sure we get on this really, really early and start talking about it beforehand. So there's still a lot of excitement about it.
Merlin, what do you think now, a week later, in the cold light of day?
Well, I just want to say for the record that I think Andy's piece that I read the other day about the iPad, I think it was one of the best things I've read. If you haven't read it, you should check it out. And that's in that paper you write for, Andy. Is that where people can find that?
Yes, the Sun-Times.
It was really good. It was very good. The smartest things I've heard people say about this,
and the tagline is, it does make sense, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But partly it's also that he spent a little bit more time with it than a lot of people who are, as you pointed, dashing off to meet a deadline, and you saw in the limited amount of time you have what it's capable of. The smartest things that I feel like I'm hearing from people are people who are saying, you know what, we haven't really spent much time with it yet. But based on what we've seen so far, it's clear that this is something different. And so number one, I think yes, anytime something new comes out that, you know, we haven't had time with, we're, you know, past this prologue, we're always going to use the vocabulary and use cases of previous things. So I forget who did this. Probably everybody who wrote about this said the same thing. But do you remember when, was it the iMac came out and it wasn't going to have a floppy?
Yeah, huge.
And am I coming through okay?
Yeah, it's starting to get a little weird.
Should be better now. But do you remember when the iMac came out and it wasn't, was it the iMac and there wasn't going to be a floppy? And
right, the first iMac had no floppy.
People flip. Because, you know, at the time, you know, you could there's a million cases of this. Like when Clinton did the welfare reform, there's all these things that happen. And then strangely enough, the world doesn't end. It doesn't mean it's going to get better. It doesn't mean it's going to get worse. But the truth is, when things change, it's not always incremental.
It's really true. People don't like change. And there, and no matter what the change is, big or small, there's always this kind of moment where people just a certain percentage just freak out. But what you're saying is this is a paradigm shift, to use an overused phrase. You're saying this is kind of an inflection point.
I don't know yet if it's a paradigm shift, but I will say that this is a company that has a record of shifting paradigms from time to time. What I will say is that I think a lot of the arrows people are shooting are falling way short, because it's either not germane to the kind of audience that would use this, or they're leaving out really important facts. And the most important is Flash business. I mean, Flash started out as this goofy thing for having little kind of rich media animations on pages. And then, God love it, it took over the entire frickin' world, and people started making whole sites out of it. It became a way for a designer to build a portfolio on the back of some company. I'm sorry, I have strong feelings about Flash, and I'm just really kind of sick
with
of
you.
Hearing this whole
I'm
thing.
I'm with you.
People think Flash equals, right? That Flash is the equivalent of streaming. Well, you know, Real Player used to be our only choice for streaming,
right,
too.
Now you're not
seeing quite so much of that. Yeah. So I just want to be really clear that, you know, if you look at stuff, what's the thing Gruber linked to the other day? The new HTML5 player?
Oh, yeah.
Sublime Video. Yeah.
What is it? Tell us again.
So Sublime Video, I'm getting this straight off during Fireball, but if you go to Jillian.com with one L, I believe, it's a HTML5 video player. It doesn't work in Firefox yet, but as a proof of concept, super interesting. Uses JavaScript to do a lot of the rich stuff that you wouldn't do with straight HTML. But it just goes to show you, evolution happens. I don't want to rant, but I'm so sick of this whole like, this cancer seed because Flash. And it's like, you know, things come and go. And, you know, it drives me crazy. I'm on my iPhone and I want to find out, what are the two things that you want to find out about when you're on the road, right? Bands and restaurants, right? Where's this band playing? Where's the restaurant? And those are the two people who most often have Flash sites.
There's an age
unusable
gulf. Isn't that funny? You can't use it. But there is an age gulf here because for me, it's bathrooms and restaurants. But other than that.
There should be an app for that.
No, I'm with you. And in fact, I think I admire Apple's stance on Flash. Here comes some Sublime Video. This is the Sublime Video player. But you can go to, you know, you can participate in an HTML5 demo on YouTube. They're doing beta of most of their video if you go to youtube.com/HTML5. And most of that video.
Well, and if you've ever watched a video on YouTube on your phone, this shouldn't be such a mystery.
Right.
As I understand
it's H.264.
Time,
yeah.
H.264, which is an open standard, right?
Now, and I admire, I admire Apple for putting a flag in the sand and saying, okay, we're going to take some heat for this, but we really want to move away from Flash. You know, I saw it interesting on TechCrunch today. There's an interesting, it's really a rumor piece. The folks at Chromium, who are not technically affiliated with Google, and yet there's some Google association because they're doing the open source builds of Chrome. They're showing a video which was created by somebody from Google of a Chrome tablet. Now it's kind of a mock-up, but it's an interesting thing to see. It's Chrome, you know, the Chrome OS does play Flash, of course, but it's all browser. I mean, you know, basically it's to say it's an OS is to give it a little too much credit. It's basically a big browser. But I would be very I'm less interested in, frankly, a Chrome OS tablet. I'd be very interested in an Android tablet.
Yeah, I really think that that we already have Acer saying that, yeah, you know how last year we were making noise about maybe doing a tablet? We've decided that we'd much rather not try to compete with a $500 Apple tablet, and we make enough money as it is on our other businesses, so we're not even going to get involved. And I think we're going to see a lot of the things that were demonstrated last month are not going to be seen again, not because they were not good products, but because they know now how competitive the space is going to be. It really is a classic face-off between what is better, a machine that doesn't do everything but does what it does extremely well and is very flexible, or something that just packs in as much features as possible for a very, very good, very, very low price? I mean, there are people, I've had Android versus iPhone arguments over dinner tables with people often enough to know that there are people that are certainly willing to sacrifice usability and certainly willing to sacrifice a clean interface, so long as they can say, well, I can do this, 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 and this. And if a year from now I want to do this, it seems as though it will be possible for me to do it, as opposed to having to wait for Apple to support it.
I'm fully, the Nexus One is now my full-time phone. The iPhone is on a shelf somewhere. And I am fully happy with the Nexus One as a phone. But I have to say, even for me as a Nexus One user, I'm thrilled about the iPad, because those three or four applications I miss, including my Sonos 5 remote control, Mint, will be replaced with the iPad. And I've been thinking, as I think of applications for the iPad, my mom does crossword puzzles. This is going to be the deluxe crossword puzzle machine.
Oh, yeah.
Among every other thing that you get, it'll be perfect for that, or Sudoku. And I also think that Apple did a really smart thing with the $499 price point. And the more I think about it, I think, you know, a number of analysts said, nobody's going to buy $499. People always buy the second one up and so forth. I think they're going to sell a lot of $499s, and I don't think they're going to sell that well in the higher price bracket.
I think this is the perfect parent computer. My mom has an iMac, and she now has a laptop, but she's not comfortable with a laptop. And I could easily see getting her this device, because not only is it great for crosswords, but it's a good computer to have in the kitchen. So she can watch iTunes videos on the thing while she's cooking, or she can look up recipes, and she can get on the web, and she can do email. And it's all just tap, 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 and none of this. Now open Safari, and you're going to have to enter this, and you're going to have to go over here and do that. She's smart enough to do all those things. But for a $500 device to just put in her hands and say, I think you can figure this out in about 10 minutes, and she will be able to, and I think most people will be able to. So I think you're going to see a lot of geeks in the first year. Next time the holiday season comes around, there's going to be an iPad under the tree.
I think an unremarked thing, even by me, is the idea that this could be the first truly modern computer and the first truly modern operating system ever released, because everything else has started with some leftover of old hardware designs or old operating system designs. If the one feature that Apple can sell the iPad on is that this is the computer that doesn't freeze, doesn't crash, yeah. You turn it on and it will work. It will do things that you expect it to do, and it doesn't expect you to do things in a way that's been done for 20 years just because that's the way we've always done it. One of the things that I had to write my piece, it was a considered, hopefully, in a research piece, hopefully, but it was also a first day piece about the iPad. And one of the things I was openly concerned about is the lack of an open file system that I would get on a tablet or an Android device that I typically can't get on an iPhone. And of course, then the developer documentation started floating around, discovering that Apple has come up apparently something better than an open file system. I can't browse the directory system of the entire device, but every time I need a Word file, it will show me every Word file that's relevant to my task now.
You can mount it. That's perfect. Basically.
Fine. Right. Yeah. And now, I think that's going to be a computing experience that's full of stuff like that, where, oh, geez, I can't configure a new printer. Well, you don't have to configure a new printer. It'll just simply sense where things can print to and ask you which one it has to go to. What's your next problem? I can't use Flash. Well, we're giving you something better than Flash. Also, we're giving you something that won't cause the machine to slow down, freeze. Well, no multitasking. Again, we're making it more stable. You know, it could be a very interesting new shift.
I think there's two patterns that are interesting here. The one that's an obvious pattern, I think obvious pattern, is that people in general are becoming more comfortable with technology that's not permanently fixed to a location or a use. And so, you know, typically in the past, you learn how to, you know, fire up Windows and do a spreadsheet or whatever. And I think over time, people through things like phones have gotten more comfortable. And that's, again, it's a typical adoption curve kind of thing. Nothing unusual. To me, the other thing that's a lot more interesting is we're going to continue to see a split amongst the people who use different kinds of technology. And I always think of it in terms of vegetarians. Like if you were a vegetarian in 1950 and you met another vegetarian, you wouldn't care about anything else that person did just because you're both vegetarians. Now today, the reason somebody's a vegetarian could be because they don't like tainted beef. It could be for their health. It could be for moral reasons. It could be for a million reasons. And just to assume that you can make a decision about somebody based on a noun like Apple user or, you know, I just think that's becomes a pretty kind of weak way to really determine how people use this stuff, because the reasons and the ways we use this stuff are going to continue to explode and splinter in really interesting ways. So and the only reason I say that, so when somebody sits around and goes, oh, it doesn't have flash or it doesn't have five cameras, you know, well, maybe someday there'll be one that does, but
maybe sooner than someday. Yeah, you kind of, what about the rumors that Apple might in fact ship, put this, some of this stuff in before the thing comes out? We got 2 months, right?
You want to say, okay, great. See, it's a coffee cup, but it has a camera. So that must be your perfect iPad. Isn't it great?
It's a coffee cup and a camera. Somebody also said to me, you know, think about it. Put a camera, just do a mock-up of a camera and iPad. It's just going to be shooting up people's noses. You're not, you know, unless you hold it like that. The iPad really is, and this is a good point, it's going to be more like, you know, here or even on the ground. It's not going to be an ideal camera device. You'd have to hold it up or put it on a stand. Not that that means there won't be a camera, but and there may well be a camera. Who knows? There's some evidence that there's room for a camera.
Well, yeah, there was something, somebody, Parts House, I guess, got frames for the iPad replacement parts, and there's a little divot in there where and they said, oh, look, if we could, we'll just take this camera out of this MacBook Pro and it fits perfectly. So maybe, you know, certainly for V2, yes, a camera makes sense. V1, maybe they throw it in there and say, oh, by the way, you get this too.
I think it's much more likely that any extra cycles they've got are going to be spent on performance, and I don't know anything about this process. I'm pulling this out of my ass. But my guess is that they're going to work on performance enhancements, engineering stuff, and just polishing. I can't imagine they would add a lot of hardware.
Speed is critical. Speed is critical. And I think, you know,
that's what Andy said. Andy said this thing's a monster in terms of speed, right?
In fact, the people who've held it, it's funny. I kind of took it out of my mind that I've actually looked at it and looked at the website. And I had the same reaction that a lot of people are having. It looks like the Fat Nano. It looks wrong. The pictures do not do it justice. And you get two impressions when you actually hold it. One is the elegance of the design, but the other is just raw speed.
Exactly. I mean, I was doing ridiculous things with this, like just saying, well, here's the browser, and of course I can zoom in and out by squeezing and stretching. And I bet if I just do this, it'll just really freak it out. But no, it was absolutely keeping up with me. If I went like this, suddenly in 1 nanosecond, it zoomed into where the letter K was now this big.
And that's a great feeling when that happens. You know, it's really... It's neat.
That's why I get back to the idea of the first time that someone goes into a Best Buy or something intending to buy a cheap $500 Windows notebook, they're going to see a cheap $500 Windows notebook. A lot of these $500 Windows notebooks, it's a full notebook with a full keyboard, but it can't...
And a camera, and flash, and multitasking.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it can't... The processor is not even good enough to really play full-screen, full-frame video.
Yeah.
You have to re-optimize it for mobile. And yet this $500 device, it screams quality with every tap of the button. Every time you move something, the example that I kept coming back to is we've seen ebook readers, like a software readers for phones and stuff, where, you know, they try to get clever and say, well, it'll be like we'll have this turn pages like a book. You'll flip it to the left and it'll be an animation of a page flipping to the left. And okay, that's cute, but you see. It always feels as though the device is hearing you saying, I understand that you've just given a command to turn a page. I will now play an animation of the page turning. And when that page turning is complete, you may now continue reading. With the iPad, you put your finger on the lower corner of the page. You drag the page over until the springiness of that page causes it to flip over on its own. It feels as though you're actually interacting with a sheet of paper. It's that kind of responsive. I was really wondering... one category I'd love to see is what happens when people start to build musical instruments for this. I mean, even the grand piano apps for the iPhone are damn responsive and damn interactive. I can't wait to see what happens when these developers start saying, well, now we have enough screen real estate, we can actually put a full hand on this. It will be fast enough and responsible enough that you could actually play a note and have it go out pretty much when you expect it to go out.
You know, I'm going to talk about some other things. We're going to talk about the A4 chip, some rumors. I talked to Philip Ryu about his program Classics, which the iBook program looks a lot like. We have a lot more to talk about, including our picks of the week, but we got to take a break and come back. Paul Kent's going to join us in a few minutes, too, to talk about Macworld Expo. He's got an update on that. I'm excited. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I'm doing. I'm very excited about what I'm going to do at Macworld Expo, and I know Andy's got some seminars and so forth. But before we go on, I do want to mention my friends at Citrix and the folks who do Go to My PC. This is the program that lets you access your computer anywhere you go. And they wanted especially to be on Mac Break because they wanted to remind you, go to my PC, works on Macs. In fact, you can access a Mac from a PC, access a PC from a Mac, access a Mac from a Mac. I mean, it is kind of the universal bottle opener for computing. I'll tell you what, you could try it right now for free for 30 days. And I really encourage you to do this. Every once in a while, I get emails from people who say, well, I tried it, but it doesn't do the one thing I needed, or it doesn't work in my environment, or whatever it is. And this is why I've always asked all of our advertisers to offer free trials, because then you'll know. So don't go out and buy it right away. Just try before you buy. Go to mypc.com/MacBreak. You'll get 30 days free. And it's unlimited. When they first started, they said 1 hour. And I said, no, I want you to be able to use it all day, every day. And they said, okay, for the MacBreak audience, okay, go to mypc.com/MacBreak. You could try it right now. It'll take you about 30 seconds to install. It's that fast. There's no firewall, port forwarding, no configuration. It does NAT traversal. So it's actually very elegant in the way it works, yet completely secure. Unlike most other remote access products, there's never been an exploit. There's never been a hack. This thing is 128-bit SSL. So, in fact, if you're at a sketchy, internet access spot, if you're at a hotel or whatever, safest thing to do, log on to your work computer. We use a GoToMyPC. It's like VPN. Now you're completely connected, completely securely through a tunnel, and now you can surf safely. It's award-winning, of course. PC World gave it their world-class award yet again for best remote access software. I mean, I think it's almost a gimme. There is nothing better out there. It is the best. I've tried it. I use it all the time, and I encourage you to try it for free right now. Go to mypc.com/MacBreak. Give it a try. I think you'll find many, many uses for it, but that's what the free trial is all about. What was I going to say? A4 chip. Now, I don't know how much of this is rumors or not. One of the reasons the iPad is so fast is Apple's done some custom silicon. Brightsideofnews.com, which I had not heard of before, but apparently Daniela Custer, who does this, is pretty expert on hardware. She was at a Global Foundries event in Las Vegas and spoke with the CEO of ARM, Warren East. This was before the iPad was released, so she wasn't able to write about it till after the release. But apparently, PI Semi founder Dan Dauberfui, and by the way, what a great name, Dauberfui. by the way, PA Semi is the chip foundry that Apple bought a couple of years ago, was the lead designer, the founder of PA Semi, of the Alpha and Strong Arm processors, the DEC Alpha. And it's her belief that the A4 is, and according to what she's been told, it's a system on a chip that integrates an ARM Cortex A9, which is the same thing used in the Tegra and the Qualcomm Snapdragon, with the ARM Mali GPU, which is a very fast graphics processor. So it's all in an all-in-one chip. Memory controller is also on the silicon. So it's kind of an impressive chip, but it isn't really Apple designed. Particularly, Apple—it's kind of Apple glued together. Does that much match with Chris Breen? What you've been hearing about this?
Yeah, that has been what I've heard. When the thing first came out and they saw the A4 processor in there, I don't think anybody thought that Apple had suddenly gone into the chip making business. They certainly acquired that kind of talent, and I think it shows that if we look at the past from things like the PowerPC chips, where Apple sort of was at the mercy of the people who made these things, and it didn't happen as quickly as they wanted. They've established a relationship with Intel, and so that they could get things, have a little more influence. But now that they've acquired these kind of manufacturers and then can go there and say, this is the sort of chip we need, and the chip manufacturer's attention is not going to be diverted. That, yes, we serve you, oh Master Steve and the rest of you at Apple. So, we will deliver on time, and it will be as fast as you'd like.
As Prostor Chan says in our chat room, unfortunately, there's really no way to know this unless others leak it, and I'm sure they won't, except by, taking it apart. You can't really take it apart. I guess you could disassemble the die and maybe try to figure out what's in there. So we may never know, but this makes sense. Now, Tegra is dual-core ARM A9. Nobody's saying whether this is dual-core or not, so we just don't know. It would explain the speed, though, I have to say. But if it's dual core, then it begs the question, well, why not multitask? I mean, if
battery.
Battery, you think? Maybe
I think a lot of it's about power, and reliability,
but power.
I think so. You know, because you keep looking at people with their iPhones, and we may have forgotten, those of us who have iPhones, for the last couple of years. But if you go back and look at the cell phone that you had prior to that, and you could leave it uncharged for a week, and you could still make a call on the thing. I can't do that with my iPhone now. If I use my iPhone as it's meant to be used, meaning not only for making calls but computing with it, at the end of every day, I have to plug it in, or maybe before the end of that day, I have to plug the thing in. So I think that Apple has to be very concerned about power consumption.
There's a lot of conspiracy theory that Apple's, you know, all of this is to lock it down, is to lock you, lock the buyer in.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be unusual.
Never heard of that, huh?
Yeah, no, Steve's usually really all about making it easy for you.
Yeah, some people, it's like Casablanca when Claude Rains goes, gambling? I'm shocked.
It's shocked.
No, I think there's another relevant line from Casablanca where Peter Lorre, you know, says, Rick, you must hate, you despise me, don't you, Rick? And then Bogey just sort of like glances over him saying, I don't know, if I ever gave you a second thought, maybe I would. And I think that's, you know, if Apple ever gave you a second thought, maybe they'd think about how they can screw you over by locking you into a decision. I think it's just corporate culture that says, look, before we make this choice, will it make the platform more stable or less stable? Will it make it easier to use or harder to use? Will it complicate things or simplify things? And I think that's the reasons why they're not doing multitasking. Also, realize that they can't just simply press a button and simply decide, great, now all applications can live simultaneously. They need to have some sort of a new common system resource so that they can all like interact with the user at the same time without bumping heads with each other. Android has that nice little notification bar, but even that sometimes...
I love that, by the way.
It's okay, but it's a little bit kludgy, because like Chris mentioned, I mean, if I've got the Nexus phone out for about overnight, by the time I pick it up again in the morning, I have to scroll through two dozen different notifications from all these different things. And also, I had a Cricket problem with it about the second night, because it was in the other room and just would keep going.
Well, you could turn all that stuff off, you know.
Well,
you have total control of that.
But that was the problem. I had to go through, okay, which of these nine applications is making that noise? And I had to go through each and every one of them. It's like being in a flash. It's like having your web browser and realizing that suddenly you start hearing, in a world where love was against the law. Damn it. Now, which one of these 40 tabs in Windows just opened a flash ad and just going through one after the other, closing windows? So
I've spent a lot of time, you know, tweaking it. And you get in the habit of, every time you install an application, is looking in the settings, of course. And then when it says notifications, you control the notifications and what's going on with it.
But that's the Apple way of doing it would be to make sure that you don't have to go looking through notifications to turn things off.
Yeah, they have one global setting in the settings, but
I think it'd be more like, first of all, having 10 minutes alone in a darkened room with a rubber hose with this developer saying, do you really want to make the phone go at random intervals? Is it really that important?
But I love it. I love that I can have, for instance, my Twitter application tweets when there's a direct message, and I can control when it tweets. And at first I had it turned on for mentions, but I get too many, so I turned that off. I love that kind of granularity. And, you know, this is that Windows Mac argument, too. I mean, Windows has all these little fiddly bits buried all over the place, and geeks like that, but it isn't maybe very user-friendly, right?
It's the oldest metaphor in the Mac world is the Protestant versus Catholic. Andy, you might have said that in the 80s, but there was an essay a very long time ago about how PC users are Protestants and Mac users are Catholics, because we want the mediated experience. It's like we want to be able to control it, but it's one thing to be able to fire up my text editor and change a plist, but I don't want to have to do that to check my mail.
Right.
Yeah. But I think we also get back to the idea of why... do we want multitasking just so that we can say that we have multitasking? When you consider how fast I can switch between applications on my iPhone, if Apple were to, let's say Apple were going to be really, really mean-spirited and start lying to us and say, okay, well, today's we reintroduced Apple OS update 3.1.2, which they actually did, by the way, about an hour ago, and we've listened to our people complaints. We have added multitasking. Now it runs all apps simultaneously, but they didn't tell us that they didn't actually do anything at all. All they did was make sure that there's no longer any cues that you're closing down one running app and switching to another. Every single blogger would say, my God, this is great. Now it's maybe only half a second slower than on my Nexus phone, but it's true multitasking and it works great. I mean, if you give me, I don't want the feature, I want the effects of the feature. And I think that the iPhone delivers at least 80% of the effects of having real multitasking.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like multitasking.
Yeah.
I'll
have to say that I miss it the most when I'm traveling, because when I go into my flight tracker, I just want to do one swipe, take a look at the latest status update on my flight, and then switch back to my book or whatever I'm doing. That's when I really miss multitasking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, with limited amounts of time, the thing I run into in some place like an airport, the thing that drives me freaking crazy about the T-Mobile service. By the time I'm done trying to log in and buying extra points and stuff like that, I got to get back on the plane. It's really frustrating. It's those little periods of time. You know, I think the busier you are, the more you travel, the more kind of CEO-like you are, the more you need that blast of power when you need it. You can't just sit there and let something render. You know, can I talk about one thing? I don't know anything about chips, but I do know that Apple likes to control everything they can vertically. And that's been good to them. You know, if you think about, I was talking to Gruber about this the other night. You think about how every piece of it locks together, right? This is an old point, but it's worth making. I don't know if the chip thing's about multitasking. I don't know what part it's about. All I know is that the thing that Steve does not want to do is walk on stage and have to apologize for AT&T. He does not want to walk on stage and have to apologize for Motorola. He wants people to line up behind him, shut up, and let him push out a product that makes everybody's jaw drop. And the last thing he wants is have to depend on some bonehead company that he has no control over with his crazy control problems. So I think I don't know anything about how these things get made, but it would not surprise me at all if to the extent possible, they will control every piece of this. Up to, I will say, look at things like Pixar involvement, right? Getting more involved in the media that's on there. I think every chance they get, they're going to try and get their fingers into every piece of the process. Over.
It's an interesting debate. No, you're making me think, Merlin. I know that's something that rarely happens on this show, but I'm actually...
I had a G1 for a while. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. And initially, I had exactly the same reaction. I was like, wow, the iPhone, can't do anything on there. Look at all these apps, blah, blah. And it was really... And again, this is the G1. This is not the sexy one you've got. But it didn't take more than a couple days and one usage of my iPhone till I went, oh... That's why I like
it. I did the same thing.
The store was a mess. It was really hard to do super basic things.
First of all,
to update every app was like four steps.
Yeah, but it's a year later. It's a year later. So that's one thing. That the G1 was the first iteration. The other thing, and this is what you see in the iPad, is speed makes a big difference. And the G1 was really underpowered. Speed makes a huge difference. There's a 1 gigahertz
start now. Mine is dead. My G1 will not even start up. I don't. I've done the whole thing. I've done all the like.
Yeah, mine's in a drawer. You know. I mean, it's not. but the Nexus One is not the G1. However, I'm not here to defend either. And I would be very interested to see what an Android tablet looks like. But I think it's pretty clear it would not have the same ease of use. You know what's interesting? As OS X has evolved, the differences between it and Windows in terms of pure ease of use are almost completely gone. It is a complex, full-blown operating system. And in a way, that's why I liked seeing the iPad. It was a kind of a return to Apple's initial mission, which was for the rest of us, right? Something easy to use. OS X hasn't been that easy to use in years.
And hasn't always felt that fast. I mean,
that's
from
too.
The early days, I could be wrong. This might just be my memory. But I think about being on something in my memory, being on an SE30 running 7.0, whatever one of the odd numbered good releases was, running 7.0 point something. I want to say like 5 or 7 versus running early OS X revisions before, I guess, Jaguar. It was like No contest. It was the my Mac in 1989 felt about twice as fast. Right. Is that me or did what do you guys think?
In those days when we were running like 10.2 and you took the opportunity to go actually boot back into OS 9. OS 9 was screamingly fast, and then you get back to
the Finder. I mean, especially in the Finder, you'd really feel it.
Huh. Well, it had terrible memory management. OS 9 did, so there were issues.
Oh yeah, no, it was really clunky. But then, just for pure raw speed, particularly if you had a faster computer because you need it for OS 10, and then you run OS 9 in the thing, and you go, oh my god,
yeah,
this thing,
yeah.
There's no reason why we can't circle back and turn this into a swipe against Flash. As soon as I turned off Flash and Safari everywhere, suddenly all that speed that I lost over the past 2 years came right back to me.
Yeah, I use Flash Blocker in Safari, and it's actually great because all that Flash is, you know, you can click it to start it, but it just is gone, and it is amazing. Flash is a big. Now we broadcast in Flash, but I could say right now that. Ustream, which is one of our providers, has done an H.264 HTML-based streaming, HTTP-based streaming, which we're using. If you use the iPhone application or the Android application for the Ustream player and you watch us, you're not watching Flash. Obviously, it's working on the iPhone. As well as the Android phone.
Now, Leo, this is that kind of borderline personality disorder that really typifies the web today, right? Everything's black and white, and there's no nuance to anything. If you use this, you're evil. If you don't use this, you're good. All that stuff is such garbage. You know, there's
well,
time
it's media.
To
it's not.
Flash.
By the way, it's not just computers. It's politics too.
Well, it's people looking. It's
how humans are.
We call it the narcissism of minor differences. We look for ways to pick fights with each other, and it's stupid. And the thing is, I wrote a post on my site a little while back about. Bands screwing up their site by being totally in Flash. Ted Leo, I told you this, Boston guy. You can't go to a single page on his site because it's one file. Okay, that's a dumb idea. I still say Flash is cilantro. You do not want to eat a bowl of it. And you know what? You don't want to. You know what? Can I just say you don't want to live in a house made out of cilantro? Maybe you want a cilantro couch.
But you might want a little in your salad. Yeah. Yeah.
I said.
And when you go to a site and you want to go to a restaurant and the site is a blue Lego. That is a failure at every level, and that designer should be horsewhipped for allowing you to have
Absolutely.
A site in Flash.
And Gruber, of course, has a great post on this, and I think that he's right, that Hulu will be using HTML5. Everybody will, and I guess that's what I was starting to say at the beginning of that Flash conversation, which is I think it's great that Apple is saying no more. Somebody had to step up and do it, and it's simply enough to have it be not in any Apple portable devices for sites to say, okay, there's an alternative. Let's use it.
Yeah, I think it's even close to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago about how sometimes in order to make a change, you can't simply accommodate, you simply have to abandon. And maybe that's part of that philosophy being given here. We can give you Flash, but that would not really motivate makers of Flash sites to move away from Flash. That great site that Gruber linked to last week about the response to the Adobe's Blue Lego blog posting, saying where Adobe posted this thing saying, well, here's all the sites that are now inoperative because it doesn't have Flash. And so then someone else said, okay, well, let us load up every one of these sites on an iPhone which doesn't have Flash. And hey, what do you know? Nearly all of these sites created an iPhone-specific version that works just as well without it. And I don't think that would have been possible. All those sites would not have gone to that trouble if iPhone said, okay, well, we're going to support it, but really, like, guys, we really want you to move away from it, so we're only going to let you do that for maybe another 5 or 6 years, so you're on notice, buddy.
Well, and I should say that we are, of course, we have several iPhone apps, and we are going to modify at least one. I think we've got two in the works that will work on the iPad and will support video. And by the way, kind of support multitasking because I want to make it so you can watch the video and chat at the same time. I think the iPad is great for content creators like us. We can make a custom experience for Twit Live that's fantastic on the iPad. There is one issue, though, for developers, and a couple of people have raised this, is if you want to ship on launch, you have to trust the SDK emulation and cross your fingers because you can't test before you ship. And knowing how long it takes Apple to ship revisions or publish revisions, if you're really taking a chance if you say, well, I'm going to push it out for launch, which we'd like to do, but if it doesn't work, then it might be a lot of unhappy people for a while. Or do I wait and come out on day two and have some limited testing? It's an interesting challenge for developers.
Marco from Tumblr had a great post about that, and it's basically laid out the three options that you've got, for what your choices are.
Right.
And if I were a developer, I wouldn't love any of them. I mean, you know, what's that story? Is that Gates? Was it Bill Gates with DOS? Like, he'd never actually run it until he just written it on cards, and then he ran it one day and it worked. Is it DOS?
Yeah, not everybody's that good.
I mean, personally, I'd want to wait.
Yeah.
I would want to wait. But then again, you know, the App Store, as it is for the iPhone, is such a gold rush right now, or a land grab. You know there's going to be people there on day one, you know, trying to win the SERPs for certain keywords, basically, from day one. And that's, you know, if you make your living off that stuff, you want to be there on day zero when that stuff goes up.
Yeah.
But I would have to think that initially they're going to have the big sites up there. And so we're going to see Electronic Arts there because they will have had these devices
for a while. You bet. So I mean, if Stephen Colbert has an iPad, surely Electronic Arts is going to get it.
Yeah. So they're going to cede these to the major players. And so when you go there, when you first have your iPad, you're not going to get up there and there's going to be crickets. You're going to see something there that's going to catch your attention. And sure, the small developers may not be there. And I think actually be wise to them not to be there on day zero, because if they rush something out and it's broken, and then Apple has this flood of applications coming in, they don't advise it for 3 weeks, where are you then? Yes, you've got your stake in the ground, but it's a stake smell.
Has anybody talked to developers about what the experience is with the whether they feel it'll be a simple thing to create iPad-specific versions, or whether they even want to do that? I would imagine what you'd like to do is have the programs auto sense and do the right thing, right? So it works on any platform.
Andy, how good is the Pixel expansion on this thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I played Assassin's Creed, and you know, you press the 2X, which is really 4X because it's double this way and double this way. Jaggy.
Well, it does remind you of how many user interface elements aren't things that are being sort of built by the operating system, but they're actually bitmaps that are part of the application bundle. So when you're using like a non, it's you kind of expect that when you're shooting orcs that maybe the orc, if it's a bitmap, is going to start looking like it's made out of Legos.
Good. Yeah.
But sometimes it'll be, you know, if you're in an Outlander app, it'll say the button for like expanding the outline. Oh, it used to be a triangle. Now again, it's a small pyramid of Mayan stone blocks.
But on the other hand, if you used a font for that, it should scale beautifully. So a lot of things will work great.
Some things will scale beautifully. I really would love to see how well the Amazon app looks or Stanza looks, because if that simply just scales directly upward, that's a very, very simple tweak. Now, obviously, Apple is going to – I think that most developers of iPhone apps have enough focus on the quality of their product that they're not going to simply say, great, we changed 8 lines, done, ship it, we're done. They're going to look for ways to completely reconceive it for the iPad. And Apple did something really cool. There's actually the ability to do a universal package that'll have one package that has both the iPod and the iPod / iPhone and iPad versions of it. So if people want to, if Stanza wants to do just one upload, just not contaminate their store by having multiple SKUs, they can simply say, buy this no matter what you have. If you have an iPhone and an iPad, that one download will service both devices.
I think that's the way to do it. And I imagine you'll have that capability. It may blow up applications a little bit because you have bigger, you know, more bitmaps in there, but.
My pals at Omni Group are from reading their blog post, they're turning things upside down.
Isn't that exciting?
They're moving some really serious furniture to really push out. And I mean, they're such an interesting company. I love those guys.
They're going to move all their apps, except for, I guess, OmniWeb. They're going to move all their apps to the iPad.
And I mean, Omni, everything, they're outline nerds. I mean, it's basically, it's one big, you know, Emacs app with like, you know, a fish tank in it. That's all the place is. And, you know, iPad.el or whatever. So they, everything for them, everything for them starts with outlining and kind of goes outward, I think.
I think OmniGraffle on the iPad will be a killer app.
I guess, people are sitting around talking about, you know, all these computery stuff. I think for salespeople, you know, for people who want to go out and do a demo on the road, this is going to blow people out of the water, you know, to be able. And Leo, remember how we talked in the past about how even like I've got a MacBook, a pretty nice unibody MacBook.
You always wanted that 10-inch, though.
Well, if I run Keynote, remember we talked about this, I would have to take my MacBook Pro on the road to use Keynote. Because, you know, you'd be hurting trying to get any of those transitions. Imagine this thing where you pop it open and based on what Andy said, stuff just flies.
Yeah,
now, that's huge.
Yeah.
I was talking to Rick Smolin, who does the 24 Hours books and all these really great best-selling commercial photo books. And he was telling me that he thinks the display is good enough to use it as a portfolio presentation piece.
Wow.
So when that comes from a professional photographer, that really made an impression on me.
It's only 1024 by 768. You know, the only thing I can live without multitasking. I can live without a camera. I can easily live without flash. In fact, I'm glad that they don't I'm actually now turned around on this Flash issue, and I'm glad that they're killing Flash. But I hate it that it's not 16:9.
Well, I mean, again, what if they gave you the exact same screen area, only they didn't give you the black bars up at the top and the bottom, would you still complain about it? Is it the aspect ratio itself, or is it just the idea?
I'd like to see 720p. I really would.
Well, because it has, I mean, it has to be it has to be a book reader too, and it has to serve multiple masters. I'm not sure how well every time I've seen a device that is that aspect ratio, it's great for some things. It just feels like you're looking at a legal pad for a lot of other things. I think that I know that's more of an anthropology problem than a technical problem, but your eyes simply say, oh, yeah, this is long as it should be.
No, I'm with you. And I think then the message is important to put out that this is a great book reader, browser, blah, 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 but it's not going to be a great movie viewing device, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's going to be a great because, okay, let's count pixels and let's see if it's true 720p or not. If you saw the movie demos that were on the demo units last Wednesday,
they were
that
fine.
Is great freaking video.
Yeah, they were fine.
And again, pardon me if I'm not up there with the ruler saying, excuse me, I only counted 708, even allowing for a 2% degree of error in my counting, that's still substantially lower than 720p. I want to know what you're going to do about this correct situation, because I have a live journal with theirs, and I'm not afraid to use it.
I'm just waiting for him to ask for his stapler back at any moment.
Pardon me? You have my stapler.
Well, it really is a question of where they're putting the emphasis on this device, and is it strictly media? I don't think so, and I think a lot of it's productivity as well.
Well, that's what surprised me, because to me it was I expected and got a content consumption device, and I was kind of surprised to see this little nod with iWork to content creation.
It's not a nod; it's a
but when you see the Omni Group like jump on this thing in this way,
right.
I think that it hints that whereas the iPhone is not a great productivity device, it's fine, but it's too cramped. But now, once you've got this bigger screen, you can do a lot of interesting things with this, and I think the fact that Omni is so interested in this is heartening, that we are going to see this an explosion in productivity apps where they couldn't do it with these smaller devices.
Yeah. We're going to take a break, come back. Paul Kent's going to join us, give us a little update on Macworld Expo, and there is other news. In fact, there's some surprising news from Apple regarding Stanza, which is an Amazon-owned application, now the book reader on the iPhone. And there's new versions of the iPhone software and of iTunes. We'll talk about that in a second. But before we do that, I do want to mention our friends at Carbonite.com. Carbonite is a backup solution for anybody who, you know, especially with a laptop, but anybody who's got stuff on the computer that you care about. 13% of hard drives, according to Carnegie Mellon, in a study they did, 13% of hard drives crash in the first year. 43% of people lose files they consider irreplaceable at least once a year, according to Harris Interactive. Over 600,000 laptops are reported lost or stolen at U.S. airports every year. That's more than 10,000 a week. If you have your precious photos, your email, your financial documents on your computer, and you are not doing off-site backup, you are not backed up. You know, when the worst happens, fire, flood, earthquake, and you lose the backup disk that's right next to the computer, then you'll know what I'm talking about. That's why Carbonite is such a great deal and a great solution. Since 2006, Carbonite has backed up over 25 billion files and restored 2 billion of those to customers who would have otherwise lost them. Even something as simple as human error. Carbonite backs up your files automatically, so you don't have to think about it. Your photos, music, emails, financial records, office documents, and other irreplaceable files. No extra hardware is required. You can recover lost files on any computer as long as you can get online. You can even use Carbonite to transfer files to a new computer. Mac or PC, I want you to try Carbonite right now. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK. You can try it free for 2 weeks. Again, always a good idea to try before you buy. And I make sure that all our sponsors do that, except for Ford. We haven't figured out a way for you to drive a Mustang without paying for it. But we're working on that. Wouldn't that be nice? Try it free for a month. I would like to get that, actually. Carbonite lets you try it free. Go to Carbonite.com/MacBreak. And by the way, if you do the free trial for 2 weeks and then you decide to buy, it's less than $5 a month for unlimited backup. Everything on your computer, not external drives, not network drives, but if it's on your computer. And you'll get 2 free months if you use the coupon code MacBreak. Carbonite.com. It's backup done right. Carbonite. Let me call Paul Kett real quickly. We'll continue with our conversation. There's other Mac news as well, but I just want, we told Paul we'd get him on just to get a little update. Andy's going to be doing Mac World Expo. I know you got some seminars coming up, Andy.
Yep, I'm going to be doing two things on the big stage, and I'm going to be floating around doing things with Macworld's podcasts, and I'm doing some things with Alex and some things. I'm surely going to do some things on the Twit Network. It's going to be 8 days of peace, love, and understanding.
Fantastic.
Well, not so much understanding, because I'll be explaining it. So,
and I'm doing the Mac, you know, David Pogue is going to be doing the big keynote, and I'm going to be doing taking over his Macworld Live, and we've got some great guests on that one. We're going to have... Roger McGuinn, the founder of the Birds, is going to perform. Isn't that going to be fun? Adam Savage from Mythbusters says he's going to blow something up, or I don't know. Heather Gold has a great comedy bit she's going to do. The one you were talking about, Macs are Protestant Catholics and the PCs are Protestant, something like that. And we also are going to have a great Star Trek band called Warp 11 featuring... Does the name Kiki Stockhammer ring a bell for anybody? Kiki was the great demo goddess. Still is, by the way, the great demo goddess for the Amiga video toaster. You may remember going back some ways. And she's now got a great band called Warp 11. So she's going to be joining us. It's all in all, it's going to be a lot of fun. Let's say hi to Paul Kent. He's putting this all together. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You must be going crazy right about now.
It's pretty busy right now. It's really hopping around here. But it's a lot of fun.
Good. We talked to you a couple of, maybe a month ago.
Yep, we talked a month ago. We were just kind of hitting that final ramp up right before the holidays.
So people, I see you tweet almost every day now with new people who are signing up. So the absence of Apple isn't hurting you in terms of exhibitors. They want to be there.
Different types of exhibitors. I mean, the absence of Apple has had different effects on us. We have, certainly there'll be less exhibitors this year, but I think the ones that are there are really interesting, and it's the great cross-section of things going on in the Apple products world. So we have tons of app developers for the first time this year in the mobile app showcase. We have cool little software indie developers. We have
Merlin, you call that Tiny Town, right?
Tiny Town, that's Tiny my favorite Town. Part. That's where all the fun is.
It's where the cool, interesting developers are. I love that part.
They're hungry.
Yeah, yeah. They're the guys who still care. And I imagine... that there'll be a lot of talk about the iPad. The iPad won't be out because Macworld Expo is just a week and a half from now, something like that.
Yeah, that's right. So we announced a couple hours after Apple's event, our own iPad special event that Jason Snell, Andy's going to sit on a panel with him. And, you know, the good thing that Macworld can do is kind of be this like an advocate for users. If you're thinking about whether you should buy one and you want to have as much information as you can before you go out and spend your hard-earned money, Macworld's a good place for you to kind of come and figure out what's what. So Jason Snell, Andy, and some other people are going to be putting on a panel. We're actually going to give an iPad away. We're going to give an iPad away when it ships. I mean, we'll announce who wins it at the event. But we announced an iPad special event where we'll really kind of go into all the details, form factor, usage, should it have a camera. You know, I don't know if we'll get a lot of questions about Flash from the audience that'll be there. But it's a good place for Jason and the editors of Macworld and some special guests and good informed people to really kind of share everything that's going on.
That's exciting. That's
right. I think it's timely.
Yeah. Well, quick, good scrambling.
We were ready.
Yeah, to get that one on there. Well, you knew.
Yeah.
In a way, it's a shame that Apple, you know, it must bug you a little bit that Apple it ended up announcing something in January, even though some of what they were talking about was, well, we don't want to be forced to announce things in January.
The glass is half full. They just created a wave, and we're just going to ride that wave right through the show.
That's a good way to think about it. Holy cow. You know, it's like, come on. Oh, well. I'm very excited. And really, as we've said before, the key to Macworld Expo is the Mac community, the Apple community, is a place to gather, regardless of what Apple thinks. We need a place to get together and talk about, meet each other and talk about what's going on. And I imagine a lot of people will be there trying to figure out what the iPad means and to their business and to them as users, you know.
And I think it'll definitely be one of the big topics of conversation at the show. There's so many things going on. I mean, Macworld is a very content-rich experience for people. I mean, all of the feature presentations we have, the great stuff that you're putting on for people. Pogue is doing some cool things. He asked me to play guitar for him, and I think he's writing a play that he actually is going to have performed as part of his.
Oh, I love it.
Thing. You know, Guy Kawasaki is going to be featuring some cool new products. The folks at our sister company that put on the demo conference are going to be premiering some new things. The filmmaker Kevin Smith. We've got the electronica music industry legend, BT. So there's so many cool things to do. And then you have about 230 exhibitors on the show floor. So yeah, product discovery, cool learning, cool social networking. I think we've really done a good job this year at creating an event, a true event that will really delight people when they come to the show.
Macworld Expo, it's just around the corner. If you haven't registered, go to macworldexpo.com. It's a February 9th through 13th, and I'm going to be doing my event on Friday the 12th. What is it, 2 o'clock? I think it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
That's right. Yep.
Then we're doing a tweet up. Myra Joyce has organized this one, 6:30 p.m. that Friday evening at the Marriott Marquis, which is the Jukebox Marriott right across the street. So we'll have more details on that. We want everybody to come out. I'll be there. Andy, if you could, I'd love for you to come. Everybody,
I'll be there.
Good.
Hey, Leo, I have a couple of giveaways, if it's okay.
Oh, would you please? That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, whenever I come on, we want to make sure that all of Leo's listeners have a chance to come and see him. So we're going to give 100 free passes to the expo floor, which also includes seeing Leo and seeing Pogue. All you have to do is go to macworldexpo.com and enter the code Leo, L-E-O, and that the first 100 people will get a free pass to come to Macworld. And then we're going to select 10 of those people at random and give them passes to our big attendee party, which is later on Friday night, the Macworld Blast. So it's really kind of cool.
I can't wait.
I think it's all good. We have a cool video on the website.
That I a bunch see of this. Made.
Could you give that a run?
Yeah, let me show you this. This is really cool. I have to push some buttons here to get this to work. I'm going to make it go widescreen, too, because I have you squoshed down to a small size. There we go. 6,111 miles to Macworld, it says. That's a long way to go.
We had faculty and fans from all over the world send in little clips. And the inspiration for this was the famous Bob Dylan video, Subterranean Homesick
Blues. Oh, I was going to do this for you, and I just... Oh, I'm sorry. I just didn't get around to it. Look at this. This is fun.
In trouble, in despair, let your laughter fill the air. This ain't no time to hang your hair, because pretty soon we'll all be dead.
So there's... Don McAllister. I love it. You're going to have to watch this on the site iJustine. Oh, that's neat. How fun. At least it's not...
Dan Morin.
Snoring. Who is that?
Dan Morin from Macworld.
Oh, that's great. In San Francisco. That's great. A lot of people using their iPhones as an enunciator. I like that. Well, go watch it. MacworldExpo.com. You can see the full video. Paul Kent, thank you so much for the coupon. We really appreciate that. Go to MacworldExpo.com and register. I can't believe if you haven't done it yet, and use my name Leo as the offer code, and you'll get a deal.
Leo, thanks for all your support, and all the guys who are on the screen there have all helped in some way. They're either speaking for us. Merlin and I spent a lot of time together. He gave me a lot of advice about how Macworld can really ring true for attendees.
Yeah, what happened? We never decided on something. Tell me what to do, and I'll show up. I mean, I could pull soft serve cones.
I could see him doing that. That's great. That's really
leave
fun.
The car in neutral. Do you have an idea how long you'll be, sir? Oh yes, I am Berlin Man. Yes, I can make your dashboard more efficient while you're inside.
It's so cool. You got
you,
all these
you
people
talk
to do
less and park more.
All right, that's a good bumper sticker I saw somewhere. Wag less, bark more. I like that. All right, we're going to let you go, Paul. Thank you. Good luck. I know you have a lot to do before next week. There's Alex.
We'll see you next week. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for everything.
Take care. Paul Kent from IDG, and they're working hard to make Macworld happen. You know, I'm sure it was a bit of a blow when Apple said we're not going to be there, but I think that the community still needs to have an event that we can call our own. It's really important. It's really neat to see this video. I'm mad at myself because I didn't get around to making a clip for them.
Yeah, I myself fell victim to awesomeness paralysis.
Yeah, paralysis. Yes, paralysis
because you're like, okay, I can either turn on the webcam, turn on QuickTime, right. Say hi, see you at Macworld. Like, no, I should get the walking cam.
Yep.
And I'll go into Boston. I'll go to the top of the Hancock Tower. Oh, but I can't go into for 3 days. Well, I'll go next week. And then, oh wait, that was supposed to happen today, wasn't it?
Yep, I did that exact same
thing. Great artist ship.
Yeah, that's the famous Steve Jobs line when they to the Macintosh group. So a couple of stories. This one just in from TechCrunch, which is, I'm sorry to say, is kind of a bummer. Amazon bought Stanza, which we all agree. In fact, Andy, was your pick of the week some weeks ago, is a really neat reader. And one of the great features that Stanza had was you could download stuff on your PC, on your computer. Well, it worked on PC too, but you could download stuff and have it sync up to Stanza. Apparently, according to LexCycle, Apple has requested the removal of the ability to share books via USB with Stanza, and that if don't update your Stanza to 2.1, if you have an iPhone, because they pushed that update out today.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what that limitation entails, because I've been a regular Stanza user, you know, for God knows how long. I have never moved books from one place to another via USB. I've always done it via Wi-Fi. So,
I guess the Wi-Fi syncing?
That's going to be big news.
Go ahead, Myrna.
I was going to say it's going to be big news for Calibre. Now is your chance. Go download Calibre, learn it, get used to it. It's ugly. It's awesome. And it leaves Stanza as a reader is still great, but Stanza for transferring files is not nearly as good as Calibre. So have you used it yet, Leo? Have you used
Calibre? No, I'll try Calibre. All right. C-A-L-I.
Sorry to interrupt you. We should come back to that, though, because it crushes Stanza in terms of the functionality they're trying to take away.
Well, you have to think that they're gonna do the same thing to them, right? So that's interesting, Andy. You're right.
No, it's open source. The Python app.
Oh, it's a Python app.
Calibre's a Python app. Yeah, it runs on your Mac, and basically it pulls down RSS feeds. It automatically syncs with your Kindle when you plug it in. It does EPUB. It does Mobi. It does everything. It's iTunes for your books. It's ugly as hell, and it's amazing.
I think we've talked about it before on the show now, come to think of it. Yeah, it does ring a bell. But now, how do you get it on your iPhone?
Open port 8080, the Hua port. And open up 8080, and it just flies through the air. If you're running dynamic DNS or what have you, you can just go to port 8080 from wherever you are. You pop in your password and download your books from anywhere.
Just shows you can't.
That easy.
You can't. It's just that easy. It just shows you though you can't really lock stuff down forever. You know, if you've got a browser, you know, there's going to be the ability to get stuff into it. However, I think this is a little disappointing. Apple clearly showing that they want to, you know, it's really a battle between Apple and Amazon. Amazon, I thought Amazon would welcome the iPad, would embrace it with open arms, because I thought Amazon, stupid me, was in the business of selling books and really not the Kindle. But apparently they want to protect the Kindle. That's the whole point of the Macmillan showdown over this past weekend. Amazon did cave. They said, well, you know, we know Macmillan's going to win. But they did pull all of Macmillan's books, printed and otherwise, off Amazon.com. You had to use a third-party bookseller if you wanted to get anything from Macmillan. A lot of authors very upset because they were no longer able to sell their books through Amazon on the Kindle or in paper form.
Yeah, you ever get the idea that like maybe Jeff Bezos has a cousin, has a nephew Lonnie, and like when everyone leaves for the weekend, they just leave Lonnie in charge and say, now remember, if anything bad happens, what are you going to do? I'm going to solve. No, you're not. Here's my phone number. You're going to call me and let me know what it is, and then we'll solve it. Because how could you possibly have had a worse response than, I know, we will pull 1/6 of all of our content from there, and everybody will rally to our side and blame Apple for us having to pull 1/6 of all our content.
You know, was this them looking back at the NBC iTunes deal and saying, well, Apple got away with it. They booted NBC out of the place because they wanted to have variable pricing. So we can do it too and we'll be heroes, right?
Yeah, apparently not.
And they weren't.
It doesn't look good as good in a black mock turtleneck, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
I think there's also a big difference between doing things in your decision making and deals that make people want to go someplace else. I think that's really different than the kind of tortious interference involved in like forcing people to change something in order to play your game. I mean, I think that's pretty different. And I think it's a weak pussy move on Apple's part. Or anytime you go after like that, you know what? If your product is good,
I mean, on Amazon's part, on Amazon's part or Apple's part?
Sorry, on Amazon's part. I apologize.
You just called Apple a pussy, and this is Mac Break Weekly. You're not allowed to do that. I'm sorry.
You'll fix that. I'll fix that in post. Right?
I'll just add the word cat. Because,
well, and you know what it does, Leo? It pushes people into other channels. I'll just say that.
Exactly. I mean, this is the best. I mean, Apple's got to be going, yeah. Why don't you throw Random House and Penguin off to Amazon? Let's just stop selling books, Amazon, because Who's that good for?
Yeah, like, are you in the business of moving product? Or are you in the business of making squirrely rules? You know?
Well, it's clear that Amazon, like, in this case, wants to be more than a bookstore. What they're saying is, we are not a bookstore, because a bookstore doesn't do that. They want to control the chain, and I think this is a. It was. I mean, I know. I think they know right now what a stupid move it was.
But did he catch like this awesome diss that McMillan made? Because part of the controversy, part of the explanation of how badly Amazon handled this, was that their comment was on an anonymous post on one of their blogs. McMillan's was smart enough to say, you know what? Let's wake up the CEO for this. Let's have a statement coming right from the top. And by the way, boss, you're going to refer to Amazon as merely a customer of McMillan,
exactly.
Not as a partner in one of your businesses. Like, exactly. Oh, snap.
That's exactly the point. Is that you know, who are they? A customer? Do they resell books, or are they the full? You know, are they the publisher in effect? And obviously,
if I were a shareholder in a company that did stuff like that, I think I'd have some questions, because to me, there's a very basic decision at the heart of all of this kind of evolving commerce. All the decisions that people have to make about how they're going to deal with this, at the center is a very basic question, which is, do you want to get bigger and more open, or do you want to get smaller and more closed? I'm not saying that's has to be mutually exclusive, but by and large, when you keep trying to close off avenues and you increasingly depend on a business model that's based on suing people or DRM or based on all this stuff, I think you really limit what you're capable of, and you limit your market. You're reducing the number of people who use your stuff. And why not learn from something like Napster? Why not learn from something like Apple?
Right.
I've got a very itchy buying finger. And if I were you, I would just be saying, hey, you know, just go get used to using this a lot before I can escalate this relationship to you giving us tons of money. I've got to get you comfortable using this. And there's still thousands and millions of people who've never even opened Stanza. I don't know. I think that's a frustrating thing for companies when they close things down like that.
It's interesting that Apple's really argument, and Apple was able to establish the iBook store by going to companies like McMillan and saying, charge whatever you want. You can charge $15. And so Apple really launched this war. Apple is obviously in the war when they take out USB connectivity from Stanza. I wonder if they're going to take out Wi-Fi as well. I don't know. That's a strange loophole to leave in there. Maybe they can do it on their own. I don't know. Apple also...
Stanza's not the only book reader on the iPhone.
Right.
I mean, let's be clear.
Well, I wonder what they're going to do with the Kindle app. Are they going to allow... I mean, they can't artificially block the Kindle app, can you?
That would be such an overt gesture on Apple's part.
But we're in a shooting war right now, aren't we?
Well, but why? But how does blocking the Kindle app help Apple? It doesn't. What they're more likely to say is that yes, you can download this application that, if you want to buy books, will take you to a website that's not really well done, that will download content, or that will then send it to you via a second mechanism, or you can go to our very nice iTunes bookstore that is nicely organized and gives you nice pictures and previews and added content. By all means, use both of them.
Right.
And so if they were to lock out the Kindle, also the bad rap they get from the Kindle app at a time when they're trying to start a brand new market for themselves, I just don't see any upside to that form.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Apple is very confident in the iTunes store and the App Store. I mean, one of the things that we didn't mention about this whole Acer idea, they're not going to compete on the tablet, is the reason they cited for that is they can't compete against the App Store and iTunes.
Right.
And we really have to look at that relationship, just as we did with the iPod and the iPhone, is that Apple's got the full solution. And having iTunes and having an App Store, so yes, you can come out with this wonderful device, but if you don't have the whole enchilada, you know, you've got half a solution.
Right.
And so it makes sense for people not to try to compete in this space.
There is another weird rumor on TechCrunch, which I don't really credit very much, that Apple is still developing another tablet with a really big screen.
Yes! We got to spend more months speculating and guessing.
Let's take a break.
Because they only work on one idea at a time. I mean, they have whiteboards there. They can afford these things.
Leo,
is Calacanis the source on
that? Yeah, probably, huh?
for the past 3 or 4 days, I've had to like do all kinds of research about a device that really exists, answering real questions that people have and not really having access to any answers. I really want to go back to that day when I could simply say, well, I believe there won't be 3G connectivity as a contract. And I think it makes sense for Apple to do it. It's so much easier just to pull things out of whatever places you can find them available on.
Somewhere I have my scorecard because I filled out the scorecard. I don't remember where it is. Did you guys fill out that scorecard? I did pretty well, actually.
I was filling it out inside my head when they came up when we saw that first graphic about the keyboard dock. I was replaying in my mind all that really wonderful stuff I was saying about how no, Apple won't have keyboard support. No, not even via Bluetooth. I don't think it makes sense for them to do that. Okay, I was wrong about that.
I stand by my prediction that there will be no keyboard on the iPad.
No. Now it has to be, I will have to go to everyone's homes and destroy them because I need to be that right.
It shouldn't be. There shouldn't be. Even if there is, there shouldn't be a keyboard. It makes no sense.
Yeah, people.
I just want to clarify.
I got it a little bit backwards. I thought there would be one camera and three solar panels.
No one in this room fell for Jason's silliness, obviously. We weren't the CNN types, right? We knew that he was being silly.
But yeah, but all the same, I really think he has to take some response. If someone is going to say, oh, everyone who believed that was an idiot, you have to realize that this is... You go on Twitter, you might see two or three of these tweets. You're not going to stick around for everything. The stuff that he was making up wasn't... If you take two or three of them, weren't completely ridiculous. That's why when people were asking me about it that night, I was pretty much – I just gotten off my plane at like 11 o'clock and catching up on stuff. And that's a bad time for a real journalist to be getting information because on the night before something,
right.
It would have been – I'm tired.
You're saying you were vulnerable.
I'm saying that that's a time when someone might say – if you're not quite so careful as you should be, that's when you simply say, well, there's a rumor from Jason that he has one right now, and I'll take a look at it later. And now suddenly it's the Chicago Sun-Times that's saying this, not just some guy on Twitter.
Right.
And that becomes a big problem. Right. I do think that you have to be really careful about how you do jokes like this, just to make sure you realize that there are not a whole lot of people who realize that, you know, having four cameras and a solar panel is actually a stupid idea for this tablet, you know, because they're regular consumers. They think right. Apple does a lot of cool things that no one ever expected. Right. And who knows?
Right.
It's sad. It's like a kid who starts out eating boogers for a nickel and then he just does it for free because he likes the attention. You know, what a boneheaded thing to do with the kind of audience he has. That's pathetic.
Oh, see, it didn't bother me. I guess because it was just so obvious.
That's sad. It's personality spam. You know, it's just like,
it's a joke. Maybe it wasn't a funny joke to some.
I have a certain amount of experience with this because one of the first really popular things I ever wrote and published back when I was just writing for the Boston Computer Society's Mac Group newsletter was I wrote an April Fool's piece that was published on April Fool's Day that was about how this is when the Mac SE was first coming out, that Apple was recalling all 128K Macs because they're a hazard, you know, they're a hazard of some kind. And it was like all of like a page and a half long, and you'd have to get to only paragraph number 7 before start getting off the rails because it explains what the problem is. And the problem is that these were installed with gasoline soaked rags underneath the motherboard and that the CRT electron bum, which there was a problem where it would start to fire backwards into the back of the case to try to erase the names of all the Mac people who were on that team who had been fired from Apple. And you would think that would say, okay, I guess this is an April Fool's joke, but Apple was getting 500 emails. We got 500 phone calls from people who said, oh, well, where do I take my Mac 128 back in? Because apparently, you know, either people read the first three paragraphs or somebody who needs someone in a real news. What actually happened was that someone who writes for a new real newspaper who apparently had 2 inches left in his column basically heard about this and just, right. According to the source of the Boston Computer Society.
Let's just throw that in.
Yeah, so it's like, the gasoline soaked rags did not tip you off, sir.
Well, really, you know, Dvorak does this every year. He does, to be fair, he does it on April 1st, which is usually a giveaway. And then usually he quotes somebody in it called Slurpaloof, which is April Fool's backwards. And to me, I always see the Slurpaloof and I kind of know. And I'm always looking for the Slurpaloof in everything. Maybe that's just because I'm a Cynical SOB. New, just a quick update. New iPhone software 3.13. It's not 3.2, which is the software that was on the iPad, but we're getting closer, I guess. 3.13 is out now if you are an iPhone user. Better battery level reporting, according to the change logs. Fixes for problems with the Japanese Kana keyboard, which, by the way, I think I discovered in the iPad petting zoo because I had a Japanese journalist ahead of me turn on the Kana keyboard and the whole thing crashed. So maybe they fixed it preemptorily for the iPad. And some other minor fixes in iPhone 3.13.
That's that new corn management app, right?
iPhone. Wouldn't that have been a good name? The iPhone?
Oh, well.
Terrific. Because the iCob and the it was already taken.
The iCob. They couldn't do it. That's
and it
stylus.
Breaks the jailbreak.
And it probably does. It probably does break that.
And yeah, the iPhone dev team said, don't upgrade if you want to keep your jailbreak.
It's going
to
be harder. I guess the A4 is going to make it harder to jailbreak the pad, right?
You know, I don't know. I never bet against smart 12-year-olds.
And, yeah, yeah. They got a lot of time.
What did it say again? It's I never bet against smart 12-year-olds.
Never do.
Yeah, never bet against a smart 12-year-old.
I got to write that down. That's a words to live by.
Sure.
Also, 9.0.3, is that right? On the iTunes, an update there. I imagine that has similar pirate breaking updates.
Well, I just downloaded it after I heard about it about a half hour ago. One of the things I'm really curious about, it says that it corrects a problem where it loses your password. So as I've ranted several times before, this iTunes keeps asking me, sorry, your account has been disabled for security reasons.
Yeah.
And then I have to click a button that says, forgot your password. That's okay. Lots of people forget
you
their
moron.
Password. No, I didn't. You guys.
You forgot, not me.
So let's see if that fixes it.
I'm trying it right now because it forgot my password.
It looks, I have it in front of me right now and it looks absolutely identical to what we had before. There's nothing visual. About it.
It looks like I remembered my password, and I just flashed all of my account information on the screen. So those of you who are watching at home, if you just rewind and pause, you should be able to get everything you need.
Great. I want the entire lost oeuvre before I start again. So thank you very much for that.
I'm actually, you know, I'm going to buy, there's a couple of apps I want to buy for the iPad. One is the Sling app, which is a little overpriced. I think it's $25. Because I want to put a Sling box on my, and then I can use the iPad as a TV and walk around with it anywhere, right? But then somebody's saying iTV for $5 will do that, right? And I have iTV, so maybe I'll just do it with the iTV.
And the remote apps are going to be really nice on these things.
The Sonos?
There are a bunch of these iPhone. Well, yeah, the Sonos is great. I mean, it's great anyway because it duplicates the interface that's on their hardware controller. But for controlling your AV gear, because a lot of companies are now starting to come out with these IR dongles, and doing it on the iPad. Phone is it's a little clumsy, or actually controlling a mini that's plugged into your TV, having that space to be able to really move around.
I was going to say that's something like the AirTouch or the remote.
AirTouch, because it's going to turn this into a keyboard for your mini from the TV.
No, you know what it's going to turn it into? It's going to turn it into that computer at work. I mean, if you can run VNC full screen sharing on this thing, and if it's as snappy as it sounds. I mean,
that will be the ultimate accessory to have to like buy one of these stupid little like Windows tablets that's going to cost about $500, Velcro it to the back of your iPad and just run VNC to get a much, much better interface. You can run all your Windows apps on the iPad via VNC with this little like piggyback thing you've duct taped to the back of it and still have the full iPad experience.
That's totally Philip K. Glass, or Philip K. Glass. That's a funny name. Philip K. It's totally Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Glass Dick, I think, is his real name.
It's the same plot over and over
and over again.
Androids. Sheep. Androids. Sheep.
Nicely done.
Oh, goodness. We've turned it to NPR. We're making Philip Glass jokes.
That's bad.
This is the sort of programming that you like. By all means, we are listener-supported radio at NPR.
Don't forget to tip us.
Next, a woman who makes typewriters out of old toothpicks. We'll be back after this.
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick. who never collaborated with Philip Glass, in my to my knowledge.
No, because
anyway, I've used those apps on the iPhone and they're crazy great. I mean, well, what's the one? I don't have my phone here with me, but there's a terminal app that's pretty amazing. I forget what it's called, something Touch. And I'm trying to remember this. Oh, you know what it is? It's that you mentioned it, that Vanu, or what's it called? Vanu VLC. You know what I'm talking about, you guys?
Yeah.
So one of the nerds in the chat room, tell me what this is called. Vanu or Vadu?
Vadu. Vanu.
Bueller. Anyway.
Jadu.
Jadu. But thank you. You run thank a demon you. Type deal on your Mac. Have you guys used this? It's crazy. You run a demon kind of thing on your Mac, and you basically SSH in, and your entire, you can squeeze and pinch, and it's basically screen sharing on your iPhone, and it wow. works, and it's crazy. Right.
And now you lose the squeeze and pinch if putting on the iPad. So it's wonderful.
Do you?
It will be wonderful.
Do you
I don't
lose
know,
the squeeze and pinch?
Stink.
By the way, you know what I love about the iPad? Even if you hate the iPad, you hate Apple, you hate everything that's nice, new, shiny, and pretty, even if you hate your world and the life that you live, the great thing about competition is it stimulates everybody to step up. And you know what Google just did? They announced they're shipping an update to the Nexus One to turn on multi-touch. And by the way, I interpret that as a shot. Apple and Google have started to kind of shoot at each other a little bit. And I think Google didn't put multi-touch in out of respect to Apple or out of deference to Apple or maybe fear of a lawsuit. Well, yeah, and I think
remember, it was available internationally but not here.
Yeah, it wasn't available in the U.S. where Apple has multi-touch patents. And I think this is Google's way of saying...
okay. Okay, it's now officially, okay, so it's like this then. Okay, so it's right. like this.
It is on.
I didn't know it was going to be like this, but I guess now it's like this. Great.
Release. It's on.
Well, I think that's so interesting that now it's Apple and Google.
Yeah.
And who thought that was going to happen?
Yeah, they were in bed with each other for a long time.
Yes. You talk about the red stapler guy. Now Microsoft is the
we market share.
He's still mad, right?
Windows 7 mobile.
I'm going to set the app server page on fire.
You can have apps for Windows 7 mobile.
Please, Ferris again.
I was told I would dominate the market for many years, and of course I will set the active server pages on fire.
Yeah. Didn't Microsoft say that a problem with the iPad is that it doesn't support .NET?
That could be. Like, could be.
Oh, well, there you go. big mess up with Apple there. They're kicking themselves.
You did see the Wired story.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Andy, have you used the multi-touch on the Nexus One? That seems like that would be crazy crashy. I mean, potentially, just because there's so much going on with that on top of everything you're doing. Is it pretty stable as far as you know?
Well, the update just came out today. I have used multi-touch
internationally,
on
non-Nexus One
device. Go ahead.
You'd have to have the milestone.
I thought you said internationally it was available.
It is, before. If you have the milestone.
I'm saying it is available internationally. Someone obtained that update via paralegal means and let me use it on his Droid phone.
In international waters.
And it worked just fine. It's not very fast. It's not very responsive. I think if anything, it shows off how limited their multi-touch stack is. I mean, it's just not very good. I think right now there's an Android commercial for some sort of Android series of phone. I'm sorry, the MyTouch phone for that runs Android and shows Eric Clapton like strumming a guitar on his like little Android guitar.
That's a cool
app.
Ad.
And
yeah.
And I downloaded those apps because I got really interested in these like keyboard apps you can get for the iPhone, and they're almost unusable on an Android device because whereas on the iPhone you can actually strum within a few seconds you're just going strum 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 chord change strum strum strum, with the Android device it's strum. Strum, strum. It's like being at the Grammys where you can't hear yourself actually play, so everyone thinks that you're completely out of sync with everybody.
And it's not by my experience. So, I have a multi-touch browser on the Nexus One called Dolphin.
There's also a third-party multi-touch browser you can get.
Yeah, it's called Dolphin. And I'm doing it right now. It does a pretty good job of multi-touch. I mean, it's fast.
Again,
I mean,
that's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah, you know, I think it also, you know, what we'll find out because the real key is Google Maps. That's the one you really want multi-touch on. Maybe the gallery, the photo gallery. Those are the things that it's missing. But the browser works fine. I mean, I'm able to surf and use multi-touch all the time. And frankly, that's something I really was missing. I hate that Zoom, that silly little Zoom.
That's stupid. Yeah.
Magnifying glass is a real limitation. So, you know, it kind of works for me. Watch, don't you just zoom in on these things, and you know, and it scales the fonts pretty well, and all of that. So, but anyway, who's to say? You get the phone you like, you know. That's all I can say.
So long as you admit that I'm right, then you're wrong. We can move past this. There's no need to keep.
By the way, I forgot one very important detail on the 313 update. The iPhone now understands the word iPad and stops turning it into iPus.
Oopaz.
Or Oopaz or whatever it was. So that's, I think, really the main reason for 3.13.
Exactly. I just tweeted about that like 2 days ago. I wonder how long before they released an update just to correct that.
You did. And they did. It was 2 days. 48 hours. Tastemaker. Let us move on to our picks of the week here in just a second. Before we do, I do want to do our Audible pick of the week. Audible is our sponsor, of course. They do the great audiobooks that we love so well. They had a nice page on audible.com where they listed all the Grammy nominees for spoken word that were on Audible. And it's almost, you know, well, it is everything. The nice thing about Audible now is they're so dominant in audiobooks that pretty much they have everything there is to get in audio. If you go to audible.com right now, actually audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for a free book, which is a pretty good deal. audible.com/MacBreak. There are 70,000 to choose from, though, so we like to pick one just so you know, kind of what you're getting into. Andy, did you have something you wanted to pick?
Yes, I'm halfway through last week's pick, which is Craig Ferguson's American by Choice.
Can't wait to hear that, yeah.
And it's that's such a good book that it has been upgraded to any time I'm in the car, even if it's just 5 minutes to go down to FedEx, I'm listening to this book. Yep. Usually I save them for when drives are more than a half an hour, so that's still paying dividends. The next one I've got lined up is something that I read the first chapter of in an airport bookstore, George Carlin's biography, Last Words. Tony Hender is a name that's going to be familiar to a lot of our listeners. He was one of the original editors of the golden era of the National Lampoon. He played the tour manager in Spinal Tap. He has a good comedy heritage. And apparently for years, he and George Carlin were talking about doing a biography of George together. And they recorded hours and hours and hours of interviews together. And so after Carlin died, he approached the family and said, well, look, we got all these notes. I'd really like to keep working on this. And I haven't read the whole thing. I read the first couple of chapters. And what I like about this, what really encourages me to get the entire audiobook, is because we're used to hearing George Carlin's voice through his comedy, where he knows he's going to be in front of 2,000 or 3,000 people, and he has to make jokes and be funny. So this is a chance. This is a time where we can hear his voice, not trying to be a stand-up, but trying to be George Carlin, explaining his philosophies and his ideas and what formed and influenced him. There's some excerpts that are up on georgecarlin.com that really brings this home. It's one thing when he's talking about individualism and value systems and religion, where he knows that it does not have to build up to everybody laughing and applauding. That really makes you understand his feelings a lot more. And plus, it is a great straight biography. I'd been a George Carlin fan since I was 12 or 13 years old when I bought my first George Carlin record. And it was years, and it wasn't until like 5 or 6 years ago that I understood that my perceptions of his history were completely wrong. I always thought that he was one of these fringe comedians that, you know, couldn't get a booking, couldn't get lunch in any town. But then the hippie movement started, and suddenly people, his philosophies and his style of comedy became commercial. And so he was able to have a success. No, he was the straight-laced, suit and tie, short hair, Ed Sullivan Show, Hollywood Palace comedian doing jokes about, you know, the hippy dippy weatherman and stuff that really had a very low shelf life. And he was having a huge career and a lot of success like this, but he's decided this isn't me. This isn't how I want to spend my future. He totally threw out his entire act, totally threw out his entire persona, and totally trashed his entire career to start again from step one to be the George Carlin that we all know and love. So this is a lot of that story about how that was, those decisions were made. So it's about 6.5 hours. It's not the most sticking it to the man you can get for your free book or for your credit. But it's, from what I've seen of it so far, I'm really looking forward to diving into it.
You know what I like about it is it's narrated, as you said, by Tony Hendra, who is really great, and by Patrick Carlin, who I presume must be George's son. Yes,
I believe so.
Yeah, so that's kind of a neat twist. George Carlin, Last Words, It's abridged, unfortunately. Simon & Schuster published it abridged, but hey, at least we get to hear this much of it. Tony Henrit, by the way, has a great book also on audible.com.
Yeah. His autobiography?
Is it Father Joe?
Father Joe, right.
Oh, is that a good book?
Yeah, I think I recommended it a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
It was part of that. It was part of the market that was created by Tuesdays with Maury, where a middle-aged man tells a story about how talking to an old man for most of his life really helped him out a lot. But it wasn't the sort of self-serving, yes, I'm a much better person, unlike you, who's never thought about these things.
Yeah.
He really paints a great picture of all the screw-ups he's made in his life, yeah, and this really sweet monk who, despite living in an abbey on the coast of France all of his life, you know, just seemed to, through Tony Hendra's recollections and eyes, just seemed to really understand that the only thing that's really important in life is to care for each other and to love each other. And that once you stop thinking of your life in those terms, everything else falls into place. Very, very inspirational.
Good pick. And of course, you can get it free. That's the beauty of this. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up for that gold account. That's a book a month. And the first one's free. Yours to keep. You can cancel it any time. I got to say, though, before you pick, you should browse around because there's so much great stuff. Bestsellers, classics, sci-fi, science and technology, and more. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. And I love it that they publish books like this because it's just, great to hear this stuff in people's own words. Time for our picks of the week. Who wants to go first? Show of hands. Chris Breen, you're in the upper left-hand corner. Chris Breen, the block.
All right. I haven't been on for a while, so I had to search through your site to see if anybody had recommended this, and no one had, and I was surprised. It is the Little App Factory's Rip It. It's $20, and it's for ripping DVDs that you own. If you try to rip DVDs that you don't own, it works too, but you will go to hell.
Netflix.
They know somehow that's a bad thing.
Yeah, somehow your immortal soul has just... And, honestly, a copy of Alvin and the Chipmunks is not worth spending an eternity in a fiery place.
Wouldn't that be sad? You get to the pearly gates and everything's perfect and clean, except they say, wait a minute, there's this one thing... One block.
Yeah, he ripped Alvin and the Chipmunks. It's to hell for you, pal.
Oh, God, that'd be horrible.
And worse yet, you have to watch it for eternity.
Yeah, Ernest goes to camp. Well, that would be the punishment. You liked it so much?
Watch it for
it's yours.
It's for
eternity.
No sleep. So, what this thing
what
does
I mean,
is, unlike Handbrake, you can actually rip the entire DVD, so you get everything that's on the DVD. So it isn't just the main feature. You get all the extras, all the subtitles, all the alternate angles and languages, and it may be the easiest software you've ever used. You put in a DVD, and you push the rip button, and then you go away for an hour, and it's done. And the quality is fantastic because it doesn't do any kind of transcoding. It's just removing the copy protection. It gives you a DVD file that you can play with DVD player. If at that point you want to do some kind of encoding, you can bring it into something like Handbrake, and then rip just the main feature out of it and put it on your iPod, your iPad, your iPhone, or
so. Let me make this clear because I want to go to hell. Does it take off the copy protection? So in other words, there's no more protection on the ripped version.
Absolutely right. All the copy protection is gone. And one reason I recommend this because there is Handbrake, which is free, and this is $20. But this thing has nailed every single DVD I've ever tried to throw at it. And that includes anything that came out in the last week. If you look at their site, they have statistics on this, and it's like 99.99992. And if you find a DVD that it can't rip, you just send them a message saying, this one doesn't work. They'll go out and buy it, and they'll figure out a way to do it, and then they'll update the program.
You know what else it does? I mean, this, I hate to be all Cory Doctorow, but it's crazy making to me that I buy a freaking DVD and then I've got to sit through an ad at the beginning that I can't fast forward through. Rip it. It'll take that out. It will make it so that you can skip over that or just take it out completely.
Very good.
Am I remembering that right, Chris? I might be thinking of Mac the Ripper, but I believe that's right.
You may be thinking of Mac the Ripper because I believe that Rip It gives you an exact copy. So you get everything. So if you don't like the ad, then you take it into something like Handbrake or Mac the Ripper and deal with it there. Or actually, once the copy protection is gone, then you can take it into Toast or something else and deal with it there.
Andy Anatko, how about a pick from you, sir? You're now in the upper right square, so you'd be next.
This is
in clockwise order.
I haven't seen Hollywood Squares in so long that I cannot come up with the inappropriate Paul Lindism.
Just go, oh, oh.
The last time I was in Dayton, Ohio. No, I think that's
good.
Yeah, this is sometimes I come back to something that I'm sure I picked a couple of years ago, only because it really is one of those pick of the week all stars that I there's something I need to do, and then I remember that I have this tool on my hard drive for it, and it absolutely solves all of my problems. I am doing style sheets for a new site, and also for a couple of new pieces of content for my existing sites. And style sheets are just not easy enough to create. It's not a creative process where you just simply let a design flow as you see pieces come together. You have to just think in terms of, you know, creating this CSS specification and BB edit or whatever your text edit is. And you have to remember, okay, I want margin gap of 12 points and then a 10 point gutter and then an 8 point, you know, so this is really wonderful application from MacRabbit.com called CSS Edit that is just it's like a movie prop. If you ever had to do if a character in a movie needed to design a website, they would say, no, we can't have shots of people just typing in numbers into a spreadsheet. Let's just make this phony baloney app that makes it all visual. Well, it makes it all visual. You tell it what the URL of your CSS file is. You tell it the URL of the page that you're trying to redesign, and then simply opens it up as CSS. And if you want to say, okay, what selector is being used for that? Okay, that's a box for a CSS style called question. Great, where's question? Great. I click on the box saying question. It opens up the style sheet, and then I have a nice little a style palette that says, okay, now I want that background to be this color. Great. Now I want to add a drop shadow like here. Great. I want that to be centered that way. Great. I want to add a little bit more space here. Great. Done. Perfect. Save it. We're done. So I'm telling you, I started off this project. It took me about an hour just to get the basic. I think I want it to be inside a green box. I would also like, if that's okay, for that green box to be centered, if that's no. Okay, I don't do it that way. Well, how do I do? No, that's not how I do it. Well, how do I? No, that's not how I do it. Then I remember CSS edit, and within a half hour, I had every single change and every single new style I want finished, done, dusted, exactly the way I want it.
Yeah.
It's only $40, but I think at the half hour mark of trying to edit CSS by hand, that'll be the cheapest $40 you have ever seen in your life.
I have it. I use it all the time, and you're absolutely right. It's from MacRabbit. It's absolutely spectacularly done. It's actually one of there's some apps that make a Mac so recommendable over Windows, and yeah. CSS Edit is one. Coda is the other one, and the two combined are just great tools for web development. Just, you know, there's nothing like it. Merlin Mann, have you a pick for us, my friend?
Oh, do I? Well, first of all, I apologize. I'm informed by Dane that I might have been on Wi-Fi, so that could be why you're not seeing much of me. But
how did Dane know?
Fixed now.
Is he reading your?
Because he's prescient. He's kind of stalking me a little weird. Anyway, I apologize. I have got a pick that's going to blow your whatever clothing you have on. It will be blown off.
All right.
Okay, so I'm gonna break down and probably do a pretty long series about some stuff of my setup because it's really come a long way over the years.
Well, I know what you're going to pick.
You totally know what I'm going to pick.
I know what you're going to
Giants.
Pick. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
This is an app that's been around for probably 5 years now, and it's been amazing all along. It's an app called Notational Velocity.
Oh, no. I didn't know what you were going to pick. I thought it was going to be you're going to pick Quick's thing.
Oh, my God. That's amazing, too. Next week. Nobody do Quick's next week.
I don't know Notational Velocity. What's that?
What? That's crazy talk. Really?
What? Yeah, no, I never heard of it. What is it? What does it do?
All right. Notational Velocity is a note-taking, note-searching app that is a no-mouse, keyboard-only, incremental search-based note app.
Ooh.
Very hard to explain until you see it being used. But if you can imagine, it's basically you've got an area where you type to find things. If it doesn't find the match that you wanted, you hit enter, and it creates a new document based on whatever you just typed. So if you're like me, so, you know, imagine you've got several thousand text files in one directory. Now you can incrementally search the contents of that entire thing using notational velocity. So you can choose to either point it at one secure encrypted database, or You can point it at a folder full of text files, which is what I've done. This is giant. As far as quick note taking, it is supported by services, so it's really easy to get to it from anywhere. If you're a nerd and you like text files, have a look at this because it's a fantastic way to take notes. Now, up until now, for 5 years or however long it's been around, I think it kind of languished for a while. It's totally open source. It did languish for a while, but it has come back strong. The latest revision, they've polished the interface a little bit, added a nice couple little features, but it added one thing that has changed my game, and that is it now syncs programmatically through the API with SimpleNote, which means that SimpleNote, which is a web service or web application,
simple text
service and SimpleNote.
Oh, okay.
Which basically is if you go to the SimpleNote app, I want to say. And basically, everybody that's used this in the quest to find a good iPhone app, pretty much everybody ends up with SimpleNote. It's simplenoteapp.com. Oh. And it's free. I have the pay app. I have the pay version because you get more cool stuff. But basically, I'm trying to explain.
So you're saying it syncs with your iPhone?
It syncs with your iPhone and the cloud through the SimpleNote service.
And
so SimpleNote is a service and an iPhone app. And if you're like me and you're running Dropbox, I mean, it also seamlessly is securely backed up with incremental changes, a la Wikipedia, in the cloud and everywhere. And it's crazy fast. You can have it basically update every minute. So every time you make a change, also it's totally, what's the word, non-modal? Modal, I always get this wrong.
Non-modal.
But you type, you do stuff, and that's all there is. There's no mouse. It just, as soon as you're typing, it remembers it, it's recorded, it's brilliant. You can still use any text application you want. You can use Task Paper, Taskmate, BBEdit, any of those. It works perfectly with any text app. I really encourage you to look at Notational Velocity, and I really encourage you to look at SimpleNote because it's to have all of your stuff everywhere with you, updated in real time, is mind-blowing. It's totally friction-free. So Notational Velocity, I think it's velocity.net. SimpleNote is simplenoteapp.com. I have tons more to say about this that I'll be talking about on 43 folders in a series, but I think you're going to like it a lot.
I'm very interested in that article. As always, I love reading those articles about how you do what you do. And this is cool.
I did a post yesterday. After like 5 years of not posting there, I started posting on the site again. There's a little thing yesterday on 43 folders where I talk a little bit about it. And you can see screenshots of what my iPhone looks like in SimpleNote, and ditto, you can see what the app looks like. But really put your hands on it, because if you're a fast typist, Andy, do you really type over 100 words a minute? Is that true?
Absolutely.
Wow.
That's completely
when I don't have to. Yeah.
And so you can keep up with how fast you talk, right?
Yes. If I made absolutely zero typos, I can on a good day when I'm properly caffeinated, I can transcribe when people who are not talking really fast talk.
Wow.
It's mostly that fast when I already know what I'm going to be writing. It's mostly the duh factor of,
well,
okay, I know there should be an adverb here. I don't know which one it should be.
Somewhere out there, there's a little old lady teacher who taught you how to do that, right?
No, I thank the designers of the Apple II Plus keyboard.
Really? You didn't take typing class?
I didn't take typing. It was just simple memorization. Also, but a friend of mine in junior high, Eric Goldstein. I was coding something at his house. I saw how fast he typed, and I thought, okay, so it is possible to be as fast as possible. Don't look at the keyboard. Just try to trust that the letter's going to fall.
What you didn't know is that Eric Goldstein was typing gibberish the whole time.
if he was typing gibberish, it was causing the machine to do lots of interesting and cool things. So.
Oh, good. Okay.
Can I ask out of curiosity, have you guys used any of these syncy kind of services? I think this all started when the Notes app sucked so bad on the iPhone it wouldn't sync. I'm just curious, you guys.
I'm an Evernote fanatic. I use Evernote nonstop.
It's a great app. It's a great app.
In fact, that's really the only thing that would slow me down and moving to something like SimpleNote. And well, first of all, I'm using a Nexus One, which would really slow me down. Evernote is available on all my platforms, and I do that.
SimpleNote has an API, though. So there's a dashboard app. There's API, so you can have an app on anywhere that...
And Notational Velocity is open source, so it might be possible. I'll have to look into it. It would be great if it would sync with Evernote. Then I would use it.
The problem with Evernote, I love Evernote, but the reason I stopped using it was that if you're on the road and you're not on... Even if you're on a live connection, you're basically appending to an RTF. You're not actually changing a text file. And that kind of doesn't scale for the way that I work.
You want plain text.
Yeah, I mean, I've turned off formatting. But with that said, notational velocity, for example, will it can identify, simple note and notational velocity can identify URLs and make them clickable. You know, it's got some nice polish. But like, Chris, do you use, what do you use for this kind of nonsense? So what do you use for your, like, piles of information?
I use Evernote every so often. But I also have the advantage that I never, ever leave my house. So I can write things on the walls. I can write them on little scraps of paper and leave them in piles somewhere where I lose them.
My greatest disappointment, my greatest disappointment in life was that the spray paint that supposedly turns walls into whiteboards doesn't work so well. Because yeah. I was just going to paint everything.
A practical joke.
Yeah, and make it all a whiteboard and just have markers everywhere. And you just, anytime you had a thought, you just write it on the wall. Doesn't work.
You can
so
still
well.
Do that.
Yeah, you can.
Whiteboards are expensive, man. I was going to buy a giant ass whiteboard, and it was like $600.
Wow,
they're really expensive.
This paint is really a good idea. You know, Rust-Oleum makes it, but then I read all the reviews, and it says no, you got to do 80 coats before it's any good.
The walls got to be totally flat for it to work.
Yeah, there's all sorts of issues that go on with it. But anyway, my pick is something I picked before, but it's back. Shashwat and Chetan are back, baby. And it's like they never left. I recommended an application. I think actually I didn't even get to recommend it on MacBreak Weekly because I recommended it on Twitter. And we immediately crashed their servers and put them out of business. Well, they went out and they raised some money from mom and dad. They did a great job. They put it back. I'm talking about an application called Pollux. Now, Pollux is a really cool Windows and Mac. They're charging for it now. The problem is they were doing it for free, and so many people started using it, they used up their free licenses to CDDB. So they're charging a mere $10 a year now for this. Let me tell you, folks, highly recommended. If you've got iTunes, Windows, again, Windows or Mac. Oh, there's my account information again in case anybody wants to get it. damn.
Now, warning, we're only going to be showing that once more before the end of the podcast.
Yeah, so make sure you write it down next time. So let's say you've imported an album and it doesn't have album art. What's great, Pollux, it kind of sits in the menu bar. You say tag selected iTunes tracks. It goes out, goes to CDDB, gets the album art, adds name, artist, album, year, genre, even lyrics to your iTunes. It is just the greatest way to kind of completely clean up your iTunes library. It does such a good job. You can try it for free. But now and I think they had to do this. They've started charging a mere $10 a month to pay their license.
A year,
I'm sorry. Yeah, they're licensed with the CDDB. And these guys, they're two college kids. One's a student at University of Berkeley, California. University of California, Berkeley. I think one's at UC Davis or UCSC. No, one's maybe at Stanford. Anyway, they're college kids who wrote this, and it's just it's a neat story, and I'm really glad they raised money. Here it is. Chetan Serpur is a second-year undergrad at UC Berkeley. Shashwat is a second-year undergrad at Santa Cruz. And they've got a third developer who's at the Manipal Institute of Technology in India, the very famous MIT. And he's writing the Windows version of this. And it's just really great. P-O-L-L-U-X. P-O-L-L-U-X, as in Castor and Pollux, app.com. Try it free. But I found it a really great way to clean up your iTunes. It's always been a problem, you know, the tagging and so forth and the album art. It just cleans it all up. It does a great job. And I'm just glad they're back because I felt so bad, so guilty that I killed them.
And why do you think that iTunes doesn't download album art on its own through when
you
rip CDs?
You'd think it would.
That seems like a very 1993 limitation.
Yeah, and they don't. And they also don't store it in the MP3. They store it in a XML file that's called by iTunes. But if you move the files around, if you didn't buy them on the iTunes store. And you move the files around, you lose the album art. It's just a weird system that iTunes has decided on. So this is just really nice. I think it's a real good solution. There you go. That's our picks of the week. Some really good ones. As usual, I'm off to download the Rip It program, which I didn't know about, and this notational anarchy thing.
Today was definitely one of those days where I regret that. I just come back from obviously a big like conference. So the first thing I do before I leave the house is turn off all of the sharing features of my MacBook. And so my fingers are twitching saying, I need to back my Mac upstairs to my MacBook so I can start downloading stuff. So I'll be there when I go back upstairs and get my if you see me like not looking at the camera, not paying attention, it's because I'm typing in
URLs
for Pollux and delicious. All down.
And I do, and I already use CSS Edit, but it is such a sweet program.
So good.
Yeah. So some really great picks this week. Thank you all for being here. Both Chris and Merlin are going to become regulars once again on Mac Break Weekly. Actually, it's ironic because you guys have swapped. Now Chris has great bandwidth and Merlin seems to be... You've got some sort of red flag over your head, which I think indicates that you...
No, I'll fix it. I don't know what that is. Maybe I'm using I look like I'm in the witness protection program.
Talk about real player. This is straight out of 1980. And meanwhile, Chris looks like he's in studio with us.
Well, you know? Now that I've got this brand with Merlin, I've got, you know, there's space in the garage. You're welcome to come over. Yeah. Just move in. The surf's up. It's great.
Yeah, baby.
I'm there.
Merlin Mann is at 43folders.com. Is that's where you'll put that article about how you do it?
Yeah. The notation of velocity thing, little shorties up. But yeah, it's probably something I'll do in the next couple of weeks. Boy, I do look bad. Sorry about that. Hi, everybody. Yeah. Thanks for having me back, Leo. It's nice to be here.
Oh, we love you, Merlin. It's so great to have you on. Merlin's going to be on whenever we can, every other week at least, depending on travel and so forth. Andy Anatko is, of course, a regular on Mac Break Weekly. He's our friend, our pal, and our star, and he's going to be out at Mac World. So we'll look forward to seeing a lot of you on Mac Break the Video. That'll be fun.
Yes, I've been hearing from a lot of people who now that the streams and the video is being placed in other places, I'm getting some flack from people saying, why don't you wear a nice shirt?
No, how you look.
It's cold in the office. It's New England and it's wintertime.
We saw the sideburns in The Economist this week.
Oh, God, yes. See, the problem is that what people don't see, like that's the first time like my technology trance has been documented, because I have literally been holding this thing in my hand for exactly 10 seconds. So I'm in like full spread spectrum high intensity data capture mode of trying to get make through a mental list of all things I want to check out, all things I want to take notice of. So I just have this like look of concentration that looks like. To a third party, I don't like this much at all. Where's the camera? I don't see. Oh, and I bet the browser doesn't have flash. So, but it's nice to be hearing from so many friends that say, "Hey, dude, you're the Economist."
The Economist. Is it in the?
As a little kid, looking at the centerfolds of the Economist, saying, "You know what? Maybe just like J.D. Salinger, I'll be interviewed by the Economist someday, and I'll be in that magazine." But, little boy's dream just came true.
There he is. I don't know exactly what that face is, but.
At least. See, I had to go to the airport twice to get onto this flight. And the second time I said, you know what? I think I will take the suit jacket. I won't just unpack it. So now,
at least you were wearing a jacket.
Exactly. My mom would say, at least you're wearing a nice jacket.
They didn't say who you were. They just have a picture. And then they captioned it, very nice, but where's the off switch? Which is not what you're thinking.
It's kind of a Christopher Lee look, I'm thinking. Kind of that lit from below thing.
Sauron lives.
Now it's time to witness the full power of this fully armed and operational tablet computer.
Chris Breen is the Mac Daddy at Macworld. Macworld.com is the online site. Of course, Macworld magazine's on newsstands everywhere. You can read his 911 column in there. And of course, all of his other coverage. Senior editor at Macworld. Great to have you, Chris.
And thanks for having me back. I really enjoyed it.
We love you. Thank you for being here.
You bet.
All right. Another Mac Break is broke.